the challenges facing our nation today can truly seem insurmountable. Even as the wounds are still fresh from the deadliest mass attack in this nation since 9/11, videos of police killings seem impossible to interpret as justifying the deaths of black men, as well as others. At the same time, a protest that seemed a model of cooperation between protesters and police ended in a bloodbath for law enforcement that defies imagination. And still, far too many voices are raised in angry and divisive accusation, trying to score cheap political points no matter how brutal the circumstances. The tragedies have been different, but the only possible solution remains the same. If we don't find a way to see each other as something else besides permanent adversaries, what hope is there for anything other than things just getting worse? Joining me now in the studio is Rabbi Jack Moline, president of Interfaith Alliance and a seasoned veteran of working across seemingly insurmountable divides. Jack, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Welton.
Finding common ground despite differences, or even because of differences, is at the core of the work of Interfaith Alliance. Do you see that as a fair statement?
Not only is it a fair statement, I think it's the only statement that paves a way out of this mess for this country. Our commitment to the values contained in the Constitution that we and the people who support our work see as being something that emerges from our faith rather than challenges our faith is really what we need to be thinking about as we look to the challenges that are in front of our country right now.
Where do you see our political leadership failing to prioritize getting beyond divisiveness?
Wow, I don't even know where to begin the answer to that question. I had hopes that this political season would be different from those in years past. I think that the underlying racism and anti-Muslim feelings that typified a lot of criticism of President Obama, and there's certainly been things that could be criticized about him politically, mm-hmm. but the addition of those two horrible bigotries that were part of a lot of the criticism did not seem to tire Americans from name-calling and race-baiting. Mm-hmm. But instead have given license to candidates on both sides of the aisle to say simply horrific things that have emphasized the differences among various groups of Americans instead of lifting up what we all have in common.
You know, Jack, I'm not naive, but I don't understand when we're in the middle of the kind of crises that we're in right now. I think the president's tone of voice and sensitivities related to what happened in Dallas were very striking, stirring, helpful things. I don't understand. Why would anyone want to make it more difficult to work through that?
Well, it depends on what your ultimate goal is. If the goal is to heal the nation, if your goal is to bring us together, if your goal is to lift up America to the places that we consider it to be great, then you would want to build on the president's rhetoric and suggest actions that we can take legislatively, personally, communally, to make this a better place to live. Mm-hmm. If your goal is to acquire power or prestige or position, then you do anything you can. You sound whatever dog whistles are necessary. Mm-hmm. You use whatever rhetoric is going to stir up the base in the hopes of making every alternative look unsuitable. Mm-hmm. And that is a very cynical political ploy. Mm.
We've had plenty of opportunities to see both parties setting their agendas going into the conventions. Do you think the crises are being taken seriously, or is it still business as usual? Let's just get on with nominating the candidates.
Of course, it's business as usual. It's one of the great fictions of politics that a party platform is going to translate into legislative initiatives. As long as the houses of Congress and the administration are in different hands, or frankly, even if they're in the same party, the legislative process in this country is so cumbersome and so difficult that it's unlikely that the aspirations that are in the platforms are going to see real policy changes in the United States. But what those platforms can do, what the planks can do, is start a conversation that will eventually lead us to a better place if they're conducted well. I applaud both the Republicans and the Democrats for the amount of time they're spending crafting their public platforms. I'd love to see a plank in both of them affirming true religious freedom in this country, because there is the possibility for healing rather than divisiveness and discrimination.
You know what's not there. So when you look at what is there, do you see anything in the platforms that give you hope?
I think that aside from the manipulations of particular issues that interest groups have tried to affect in both platforms, this time every 4 years is a time of great affirmation of the American process. I am reluctant to point my finger at this policy or that policy because, as I said, it's a lot of rhetoric. But taken as a whole, the platforms themselves are an affirmation of our love of this country and our belief that it is as great as it ever was and will be even greater as we move forward.
Talk for a minute, if you will, Jack, about the unique opportunities of approaching conflicts from a faith-based perspective.
So, Welton, it's interesting. This morning I had the extraordinary opportunity to meet with two of the survivors of the Charleston shootings. These were two women who survived, one by rolling under a table and playing dead, and the other who was spared by the gunman in order, as he said, to tell the story of what happened. And where you would expect bitterness, where you would expect anger, where you would expect a lack of respect and trust for people who are different than they are, these two women and their husbands who accompanied them had nothing but hope for tomorrow based on their faith, based on their commitment to the love that they learned from the Bible studies that they attended, just like the one where the tragedy took place. And so I think that in this country, if those of us, particularly those of us whose hearts are open to each other, would look a little more closely at the real mandates of their faith, not the policy mandates that they presume come from 2,000 years ago or 600 years ago or 3,000 years ago, but the real transformational advice and mandates of our faith traditions, we would find out that, first of all, we're to love each other, and next, we're to take care of each other, something I know you sign off with each week. And last and most important, we're to respect that there is something larger in this world than my opinion.
Yeah. Changing the subject, how concerned are you about this so-called First Amendment Defense Act, or FADA? There was a congressional hearing this week that really brought out some of the most egregious misinterpretations of religious liberty.
Well, the First Amendment Defense Act is probably the most inaccurately named piece of legislation to be considered by Congress in its history. It is a license to discriminate. It is an affirmation of a falsehood, which is that this is a Christian nation. My friend and your friend, Brent Walker, likes to say, if we're a Christian society, it's by sociology, not by the Constitution. It is serving the main purpose of outing those people in the legislatures who don't understand that the First Amendment to the Constitution guarantees diversity, not shores up a particular perspective.
What do voters need to do to encourage and hopefully ensure that divide and conquer isn't the main tactic of this election season? What does each of us have to demand of our leaders and our representatives in that regard?
I think voters should accept no excuses for bad behavior from candidates. I'm going to wind up voting for someone for president, Welton, even though I have questions about every candidate that I've seen. But I want to state my reasons for supporting a candidate on the basis of the ideas that are put forward and the hopes and aspirations that are expressed by that candidate, and not on the basis of who that candidate wants to exclude from the process. Mm-hmm. I think that voters need to demand more from the people who are seeking their vote than simply pandering to their own selfish needs. Mm-hmm. And that, by the way, is the case whether we're talking about people who feel that the majority in this country has been disenfranchised by the influx of people from outside the shores of the United States, or whether we're talking about people who feel that they're part of the 99% that's being ripped off by the 1%. It doesn't matter to me which. Our goal should be coming together, not tearing apart.
Jack, what do you think young people in this nation are thinking about what they're seeing in these acts that we call democracy?
So if you added our ages together, Welton, it would take a whole lot of young people's ages to catch up to where we are. But I just spent a week with my kids, and we talked about a lot of things. And I have to say, I'm alarmed at what they feel about the role of religion in this country. And I am alarmed at what is happening with the rhetoric of campaigns and what's going on in the streets. I will tell you that for the first time in my life, I'm 63 years old, I'll be 64 next month. For the first time in my life, I told my kids to make sure their passports were up to date. It is alarming enough to me to see the division that's happening in this country that if we don't step up and do something about it, all of us need to know that we have somewhere to go.
Wow. This past week, I had the good fortune of someone asking me about the Interfaith Alliance. I loved it because nobody had asked me that in a while, and I loved talking again about why this organization is so important and particularly why it is so important, not just in this election cycle, but in the whole milieu in which we're living right now. And I love to hear you talk about it, and that's why almost every time you come, I ask you that question. So talk about Interfaith Alliance and all of the good work it's doing.
I have to say I am in contact with people who are in coalition with us on all sorts of issues all the time. And the thing that I am reminded of every time I meet with these folks is that we're the only organization that says faith has a positive influence on life in the United States if it is expressed in consonance with the values of the Constitution. Most of the people we find ourselves in agreement with on legislative matters are people who oppose the influence of religious traditions because those religious traditions are trying to impose themselves in what I would consider to be an unconstitutional way. And it's easy to come to the conclusion that, therefore, religion and government should have no relationship to each other at all. Mm-hmm. On the contrary, there is a wide plane on which every idea that is held deeply needs to be brought to the attention of the American public. And we at Interfaith Alliance are, to the best of my knowledge, the only ones who are not prescribing faith to an American community, but suggesting that faith has to inform the individual and collective decisions that we make. I've started talking about the mall here in Washington, D.C. Mm. It's bounded on one side by Constitution Avenue and on the other side by Independence Boulevard. And in between is this wide open space to which Americans can bring themselves, their ideas, their notions, their hopes. But there is no institution along either Constitution or Independence that is a religious institution. Those values come in with our citizens, and when you leave the mall, you take those values with you too. It is what's in between that makes us American, the wide open spaces where every point of view is welcome and every point of view is important. And that's where we will inaugurate the next president of the United States.
Rabbi Jack Moline is president of Interfaith Alliance with many years of congregational leadership and interreligious activism on his resume. Jack is a prominent advocate for constitutionally based religious freedom in this country. And Jack, thanks again for being with us on State of Belief. You're always welcome here. I'm glad you were here today.
And I'm always glad to be here. Thanks for having me again, Wilton.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, I want to say a sincere thank you. If you've heard something on this week's show that you think would be helpful to someone you know, please share it with that person. Direct them to stateofbelief.com, where they'll find full episodes and in-depth archives, extended interviews, transcripts, and links mentioned in the show. The community that's grown around State of Belief Radio is active all week long, online. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter and engage in the discussion. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see, Welton.